Okay, hi everybody. Good afternoon. My name is Martine Bélanger. Thanks to Frédéric, and thanks all of you to be here. And my co-author is Chloé Gervais. So the outline of the presentation is, as you see, a very basic one, like our own research question, material and methods, and results and discussion. So, first of all, the background of the study is that, as we have heard so far, informal care is a cornerstone of ID care, at least of Alzheimer's disease care in France, but we have seen also in OECD countries and maybe also in US, even though there were some differences in the presentation of Courtney earlier today. And also, it seems that home care, no, maybe it is for that for Courtney, it seems that at least in EU countries, home care seems to be among the preferences of both individuals and families, and maybe, I use also states, but maybe for states it's not exactly the same reason of preferences than for families or caregivers. And in a previous study we carried out in France, also with Chloé, we showed that the predominant share of hours of care and assistance was done by informal caregiver, at least in terms of hours. And as you may know, at least for those who are economists in the room, we are used to say that providing care for elderly and especially for people with Alzheimer's disease could certainly lead to a burden of care, and this burden of care is called in economics externalities or spillover effects. These have been shown by many colleagues, and especially our colleagues from the Netherlands, for instance, Bobignac and colleagues in 2010. And so those spillover effects can be assessed in terms of outcomes, health outcomes. We have seen that this morning in the first presentation, but also in terms of opportunity costs. And the same, we have seen that it could be productivity loss, or it could be also reduction of time you spend, or caregivers spend to work. And so we think that maybe for care policies to be effective in the long term, and since those elderly with Alzheimer's disease stay at home, we think that maybe there is a need, at least maybe I will focus mostly on France. Maybe we can discuss the same in your countries, because at least I think there is a need of a greater recognition of caregiver needs for support. Because we have seen earlier today that there is a relationship between quality of care and maybe also as outcomes. So since a large part of caring is done by, as you have seen also in your survey, is done by informal caregiver, I think that maybe policy decisions need also to support those caregivers. And yes. So when we talk about needs for support or support services for people with dementia or for people with Alzheimer's disease, mostly is a large spectrum, because it includes medical, psychological care, but also social supports, also including training or education related needs. So it's huge. And also, if we look, so we did a survey and on the EU country, and we found two main types of policies to support carers, which could be financial support of cash for care, which is the case in France mostly, or it could be in-kind services. And we see within those in-kind services, you could have non-specific, non-specific or indirect in-kind services, such as home-based professional services. It could be non-specific but direct, which is mostly respite care. Or it could be in-kind specific support, such as counseling, training, and information, maybe it's not the right term, information support group. And in ballpoint, I just put those we focused on the study for France, which was respite care, training and support group. Also because, as you may know, we don't have so many data, so we have at least information for those, also support care services. And also there is very few studies in France carried out on that topics, because the research question we had is was whether, to what extent is a caregiver willingness to pay, which means the value they put on being replaced for getting a 1 hour of care, could be influenced by his or her need for support services. I think is the way, it was a kind of proxy to see whether this could be influenced and how we could work. So for the data, for the study sample, we use two set of data. The one which is called Disability Air Survey is a data set, a huge data set with about 30,000 individuals in France, and it includes data related to health impairments, either physical or cognitive impairments, and it was carried out in 2008, but all these socioeconomic, gender, all this stuff, characteristic, and health and impairment are self-declared information, so self-reported information. And on the other hand, there is disability healthcare giver data set, which collect more or less the same information than for the other data set, but mainly focused on caregivers. And this is the first scan, as I said to my English colleague, UK colleagues before, in the first session, we don't have so many databases in France. When we compare, I'm a bit jealous of people in the UK because it's very difficult for us to access data. So we were happy to get this, to have access to this data focusing on health caregivers and having at least some information interested for economies such as willingness to pay, which is the first type of data set in front of this kind, having willingness to pay. So we were happy, so we take it. And so within those individuals for whom, maybe because not them, who were reported with ID, there were only 400 ID people, individuals. And then for those who were declared with Alzheimer's disease plus having a caregiver, informal caregiver, we had only 192. And then when we merge the two bases, and some of them have two caregivers, more than one, so we had a study sample of 266, which is not a big sample, but at least we did our analysis on that. And then for the data, so as I said, we will focus our study on the willingness to pay. So we get the information from, so we use the contagion variation method, so based on stated preference. And so the willingness to pay information came from an open-ended question. It was, as I quoted here, imagine that you could be replaced for 1 hour for the care you provide to the recipient. What is the maximum amount that you would be willing to pay for this hour of care? So, and then, just to explain, because people are not so used to declaring their willingness to pay, so there is, before answering, not that this amount would entail a decrease in your budget. That's just to give an idea of what could be the price they could declare, the price in quotation they could declare. And so, as you may imagine, and that we could have some no answer or protest answer from people who don't want to declare their willingness to pay, and we could also have zero value, or value given as a zero in terms of amount they would be, the price they would be given. So we have to disentangle this protest versus or false zero versus true zero. So for our statistics, for our model, we use We use a Heckman two-stage model. With for the first estimation, we use a selection equation where we use a probit as a model to estimate if kind of a conditional estimation, if they were able to use to estimate what could be the value they could have done. And for the outcome equation, we use as it is written here, which is not exactly the type of statistic equation, but at least where there is here is a probability for given the willingness to pay, and here is log. Since we have a skew of data, and then since we have also we use a logarithm of the willingness to pay. And so for here, Z and X are given for the characteristic from both the caregivers and the recipients. And then we use two hypotheses for the independence error terms. And we see that if the hypothesis zero was rejected, which was the case, so we have these two stage procedures. And so again, the willingness to pay value has to be estimated conditionally to the probability of having given a value. And then we also estimate the inverse mean ratio to give the impact of omission of equation one when we estimate in equation two. So now, the result we get. So first of all, the descriptive statistics. So mostly in most presentation, we have this kind of statistic that the caregivers are mostly females because we have here more than 60% of females, and also since it is Alzheimer's disease, also more than 60% are retired yet. And also we have 50% of household having income, monthly income less than 2,000 euros and most and 50 above. And so here we were able to get the caregiver needs for support, and you see that 20% express need for respite care, 18 and 20 for care training and for support group. And for care recipients, again, female are majority, and mid age was around 80. And on average, the willingness to pay was equal to 12 euros, which is on average what was found by different colleagues, different papers, faculty. And so, before showing the result of the Ekman model, just to show you that we were able to, by doing a logistic regression, to assess the impact of different health states on the caregiver needs for support services. So you could see that for all of them, you could have here for general health state with respite care, you could have for sleep problems, or you have depression and support groups. So there is a link between health caregiver states and needs for support services. And then for the last, I avoid my big table, Valentina, I just took. So amazingly or surprising, the only association we found, at least significant association we found, between the willingness to pay and the need for care support or support services was with a need for care training. We don't find any significant association with need for respite care, at least in our study, and neither for the support group. So what do we conclude or we can discuss? That it seems that care training is a more effective alternative to some informal care. Maybe what we think is getting a training and getting education make the caregiver feeling more committed and more skilled. And conversely, maybe need for respite care or people less committed, or maybe we found some papers thinking that they feel guilty when they have to maybe they have to find solution of icebreaker because they don't take care. They like they would like to, but they cannot. So maybe training is more is most positive in terms of valuing the work done by informal caregiver, and also it's it improves quality of care, as I said, or hypothesis. And yes, and I think is a way of what we can say is can call a caregiver's empowerment and a way to improve also. It could be a way to improve social welfare. Once you improve utility and individual empowerment, means that it could be also a social perspective. But it's just a very small study, and maybe we need also to compare, because here I just use this willingness to pay, which is one side of the core of the coin. And maybe we need further cost-benefit analysis and maybe also comparing with maybe larger data set and comparing this kind of service. And my last slide is there is some limitation in our study. First, we use dichotomous variables representing needs for support, and these have been also reported by Kupmanska in previous study. So we don't have any information in terms of level of needs, so which is always very interesting in terms of intensity. We don't have that. Then the contagion variation method we know is based on individual preference. So can we base policy or collective decision only based on individual preferences? It's a bit tricky. And also, we could say that we have this significant association between individual willingness to pay and needs for care, but does it mean that it is effective? We were thinking maybe we have to know, we don't know when the training started, when it started, and for whom, because sometimes you could have more than one caregivers we are seeing. So maybe we have two caregivers, so who will get this? We were not able to know that. And then it's a small sample and study only focused on French system. So, but we found some positive impacts of training program. We had, I think, a couple of studies in the UK, but also in the US. But at least we don't find any, to my knowledge or to our knowledge, in the EU. So this is my presentation. Thanks for your attention. Yes?
Just wondering, what was the care training about?
The care training is, at least in France, it was just to get some skills, some how to take care of a patient. It was on training about the disease of Alzheimer's disease. It was about on which type of care which can be done, and also kind of it includes also some kind of affective behaviors, all of that, all of this.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, Marilyn.
Do you know if other people have studied the data for the whole caregivers? Because from the survey, there was 4,000 something.
Yeah, we just focus on the caregivers for Alzheimer, but the caregivers, you had 5,000, so we are only a very few. So some colleagues has worked for people with dementia, but not using the studies have been done by my colleagues from Marcia only on willingness to pay on the but not focused on willingness to pay and as we have done.
Because it could be interesting to see if there are specificities to caregivers for Alzheimer's disease compared to other types.
Yeah, yeah. We know that we have some specificity with Alzheimer's disease, and I think I like the question too, because I think that as we have seen earlier with a colleague, maybe Jill before, and she said that the caregiver is not the same type of care for Alzheimer's disease or for people with chronic conditions, any type of, for instance, cancer. So I think that it is true. And maybe also, but I don't know the result from other studies.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Karen Fisher. I'm very interested in your second point here about individual or social perspectives.
Yeah.
And I know from our qualitative research with people with dementia and their family members that the people with dementia themselves express that urgency of need for support for their family member.
Yeah.
So I think it is a very interesting
yeah.
specific case around dementia that people with early stage of dementia
yeah.
recognize the need to support their family
yeah.
member. So I think that is a very important point.
Yeah, yeah. So, but the problem is here is we just get the information through this willingness to pay question, which is a very, you have seen, is a very basic question. I think what could be interesting, and I think some colleagues are thinking of doing kind of mixed methods, using this quantitative data
yeah.
and also qualitative, because I think my colleagues who are in the room from the school are mostly qualitative. I think we have to join our efforts, because what we get here and what we got here from the quantitative need to be confirmed or maybe infirmed by interviews. I totally agree, but we have to put our efforts here in the room, so we have to put our efforts together.
If that was a respect care influence using measure with a quality study, we still get what also matters in the willingness of informal carers of Alzheimer's disease patients to get formal care. It's really not just the type of relation that they have had all through the years if this relation has been perpetual, they have a common project that we're getting together. And we saw the people that give very high intensity of care to their relative, they also receive care very nice relations, and they're very involved with their care. We see the pleasure of giving those high intensity care to their patients. So they are not so eager to go and get formal care. And this is where respite care helps them to get some more distance in the relation with their relative. Because the professionals that are involved in this type of case, the psychologists, most of them, so they can very easily to make decisions for themselves without feeling guilty to having home care. That's important for them to say.
Okay, so thank you.
Thank you very much.